So our next speaker is Neil Burgess, who is a senior commodity analyst with Agribusiness in Westpac Bank, and he's going to give an overview from his perspective. Please welcome Neil.
Well, thanks, Guy. Good afternoon. Now, you'll all be fairly relieved to know that even though it's been talking about the rural economy, I'm not going to, you know, sort of bamboozle you with lots of high numbers and, you know, talk about GDP and GNP, etc.
I was looking forward to that.
Yeah, sorry. What I will say, I mean, you've all sat around this morning and sort of listened about a sort of rural sustainability. I mean, and certainly from the bank's point of view, I mean, we really wanted to see rural sustainability too. I mean, if we're funding these operations, we want to make sure that this is an ongoing process, and we certainly don't want to be here 1 minute and gone the next. So I kind of sat down and sort of looked at some of the speakers that were going to be on today, and rather than try and cover some of the same material, which obviously they were much more qualified to do than I am, I wanted to try and just sort of look at sort of the rural economy from a fairly high level. I mean, there's a lot of influencing factors on it. Certainly climate, overseas factors, global economies, they all influence what actually goes on sort of rurally here in Australia. So rather than trying to cover everything in a relatively short period of time, just wanted to look just on a very high level at some of the really, what we sort of think are the really important factors that we can actually have control of and that really are involved in sustainability. And it kind of boils down to three fairly simple things. I mean, first of all, we've got the people sort of out in the rural communities. And basically, I mean, without the people there, it just doesn't exist. So it's a really fundamental part to it. And secondly, I mean, is debt and equity. I mean, obviously, from a bank's point of view, that's what we're really interested in, because this is how we make our money. And obviously, I mean, it sort of generates money for the economy. And third point was property. The actual land itself. It's quite simple. If the land's not there, we don't have the people, we don't have a sustainable rural economy. So the first thing is the people. People are out there. Now, probably a lot of you have actually seen this chart. It's a couple of years old, but it's actually quite scary when you look at it, because you actually look at the ages of our farming community. Now, like I say, this is a few years old, so in fact, all it's done is actually push those ages further out to the right. Now, Phil actually, touched on a very important topic, that you actually look at the people that are actually in agriculture and the ages and the actual people that are leaving rural communities and the ages of the people that are leaving. I mean, touched on it, it's the 20 to 40 year olds. And these are the people that really need to be sort of coming back into the rural community and actually getting back into agriculture. Because without them, when all that's going to happen is that age profile is going to get further and further out. And if it's going out to that end and we've got nothing to come in at this on the left-hand side, well, you don't need me to tell you what's going to happen. I mean, agriculture is just going to, it's just going to dissipate. And really, agriculture is one of the real backbones of us in our rural communities. Now, these are actually some numbers of actually employment as a percentage, basically, of the entire working population of Australia. And you can see it's a pretty ugly trend. It's going down as people are leaving. Now, but obviously, the working population of Australia has increased, but still, when you actually look, it's that trend that it is, long-term is actually worrying. Apart from, and we've seen just a little kick at the end there is actually a small increase. Now, obviously, 2009, if you look at it, we had the global financial crisis. I mean, who knows, it's probably bankers and economists, etc., that are probably looking for work as they've been kicked out of jobs and they've actually moved back into agriculture so they can do something better. But it's a long-term trend, and certainly from my point of view, that to actually sit down and look at where the economy is going and the influencing factors on the economy, certainly if people aren't coming in, it is something that we really have to be concerned about. Now, I suppose the only saving grace is that while you know, the long-term trend is that the numbers in agriculture and working in agriculture are actually falling as a percentage of the entire working population in Australia. Just looking at the absolute numbers in, you know, of people employed in agriculture, fortunately, it's actually quite static. That it's all around that 320,000 and has been, you know, for a considerable period of time. So, overall, while there is a declining trend, it's nice to see that, you know, agriculture is still managing to hold on to a certain degree to the people who have actually got there. Now, I suppose this is something that's pretty close to my heart. I would imagine that people who've got, you know, farms out there with debt, and it's pretty close to your hearts too. Now, this is the actual, this is you know, Reserve Bank of Australia data. This is the level of agricultural debt that is being held, you know, by Australian farms. And as you can see, I mean, you know, it's fairly sort of modest. In 94, you know, just sort of ticks along, and then we've got this, you know, sort of real exponential growth, and it's sitting just at this moment in time at just below $60 billion. We've got to sort of look, you know, what has actually fueled that? Now, in a relatively short period of time, you've actually seen it grow. I mean, certainly, you know, there's been commodity prices, there's been easy access to debt, you know, capital markets have been, you know, awash with funds, and keen to get it out there. You know, we've had drought, no income, so you've got to get, you know, cash, you know, for every day to keep the farm running. And again, debt's been a you know, a driving factor of that. But if you have to look at this one, I've actually done this one. The actual bars, the same information as the debt, but it's actually measured against a weighted average interest rate. Okay. Now, the weighted average, I mean, this covers basically all banking facilities. So, even from small ones, you know, to the multinationals, this is just average interest rates on farm debt. Now, as you can see, when it crosses over here, I mean, this is what, about June 2004. You can see we've got the nice period of, you know, relatively stable interest rates and easy access to debt. Economy starts to, you know, heat up a little bit. You saw interest rates rise. But I mean, look at where the debt levels have gone. So interest rates, even though interest rates are rising, there's been easy access to capital. People have taken it on board. Because we all know what this is here. So, if you look at that, I mean, from that point there, even though interest rates have dropped, I mean, you can see that, you know, that actually debt, overall debt levels in agriculture, it's kind of levelled off. Now, obviously, there's a number of factors to that. Obviously, you know, the banks tightened up on their policies. You know, capital wasn't readily available, certainly to the banks, and if it's not readily available to us, it certainly isn't readily available to yourselves. And certainly, agriculture sort of, you know, hunkered down. You know, the world was, you know, a little bit uncertain, and you know, it's we're now just waiting for the next kick. And you've seen, you know, here. I mean, obviously, you know, we've all got mortgages to pay, and we know that interest rates are rising. But at this point in time, you know, sort of agricultural debt is, you know, is still steady. But I mean, I will touch on this just a little bit later. But there we go. Look at that. It just goes to show. I mean, even a small, a small rise in interest rates. You know, remember these are average interest rates, of course. But, you know, a 1.65% increase. But then look at the amount of debt that's been taken on in a relatively short period of time. You know, an increase of 64%, $22 billion. Yeah. All well and good while the economy is really rolling along and productivity is up and cash flow is being generated to obviously repay that debt, because it is a considerable burden. And it was touched on this morning just before lunch. We're talking about, you know, farm productivity, that we're not seeing the productivity gains that we've actually seen previously. Now, it's take a genius to work out that if all of a sudden your productivity is starting to slow, you've still got big debt levels and interest rates are starting to rise, there's going to be a crunch coming somewhere along the line. Now, generally speaking, I mean, from a bank's point of view, it's property values. You know, as property has risen, you know, farmers want to, you know, increase property, got to buy new farms. They look at the value as it's increasing. Banks are willing to actually lend against increasing property values. Now this is over time, and you can see that property values are still increasing, but they're not increasing at the same rate as they have been previously. Now while property values are now beginning to, you know, they're increasing but at a decreasing rate, you know, it's productivity, like we touched on, you know, is not increasing as fast as it was, and we've still got big debt loads. Now these figures were actually taken, this is New South Wales properties only, because we're speaking in New South Wales, we just, you know, thought I'd cover the state rather than looking nationally. So if you actually incorporated national figures, you'd probably find the actual curve is a little more, it's a little steeper. But this is purely on New South Wales numbers. And as you can see, I mean, you know, we started in 2004, you know, big property increases. Gradually over time, while property has still been increasing and rural property has been increasing, it's now increasing at a much, much slower rate. And you get in at some points, I mean, you know, 2009, I mean, this is Western grazing. So it's, I think we're actually starting to see, I mean, these are average prices, of course, but you're actually starting to see some of the property actually show negative growth. So if you're trying to look at, you know, going forward to actually retain and build, you know, sustainable communities, and certainly rural communities, you've got an issue here when you've got property prices starting to turn the other way. You know, big debt levels and lower productivity. It's not an easy, mix. Anyway, what are the challenges going forward? I mean, the biggest thing is people. Getting the people out there. Making rural life and agriculture sexy again. Now, how do we do it? Well, I mean, you know, you've heard this morning of people talking about it. But it is a real issue. You know, how to retain younger people in rural communities and how to attract new people. I mean, you're reading in the press, you know, that they're looking to try and get, you know, Australia's population up to 35 million. And then I think it was the National Farmers Federation came out and said that I think it's just under 90% of the population, you know, living in the cities and the surrounding areas, which covers effectively 3% of the land mass. Now, I live in Sydney and I live in the eastern suburbs and I'm pretty close to where I work. And I tell you something, it's a nightmare now. So you can imagine what it's going to be like, you know, in a couple of years' time. So there is a perfect opportunity here, you know, to actually build rural communities again. I mean, if they're looking to build the population, let's face it, we've got a lot of land here in Australia. Here's the perfect opportunity. Debt, sustainability. It is, you know, a real issue, particularly with, you know, property prices, property values changing. And the next period, certainly for agriculture, is going to be very, very interesting, because there isn't going to be that ability to just continue to fund agriculture with debt. You're going to see, you know, a fundamental change and a fundamental change in the mix of debt versus equity versus new partners coming into the business versus overseas equity. And that is a whole new can of worms and a whole new argument and discussion. But you're seeing it now. You know, you're seeing Terra Firma, you know, out of the UK, Guinness Peak coming down, and buying into Australian rural business. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. You'll see more and more of it. There are large pension funds out of the UK, the US, the Middle East, who have, and the Netherlands, who literally have got cash to burn, billions of dollars at their disposal. And you look at the value of, you know, Australian assets, they are very, very attractive, particularly rural assets. So this is another stage in, you know, rural evolution. And certainly, you know, coming on back onto property, the affordability and availability of it, you know, it's coming to the point where, is property getting too expensive? If you look at what you're actually going to make off the land, and if you can't fund it by equity and you've got to fund it by debt, you can do your sums and you can very quickly come to the equation that and the conclusion that, you know, once you start paying over the odds for it, you're never going to make a return on it. So that's really where we are at the moment. I mean, it's, you know, it is tough at the moment, but I think there are certainly a lot of opportunities. And like I say, the next 12 months, the next 2 years, watching commodity prices. It's going to be very interesting to see where the rural economy goes. And from that, I've got to give you that. That's my disclaimer. So if you agree with what I've said, that's all well and good. If you don't agree with what I've said, well, that's even better. At least we can discuss it. But at least if I've shown you that, at least you can't sue me. All right. Thanks very much.
Has anyone got a question? There's one over there and there's one down here.
So, when are you leaving Eastern Suburbs
and
coming to Narrabri?
Well,
it's no good there,
and
you know what it's like.
Well, that's true. That's very true. Look, I would love to actually come out. I love coming out to rural Australia.
And no worries.
Yeah, I think it's. Look, it's one of those things that you're sort of based in the ivory tower, and people within the bank get sometimes quite a narrow view of what's actually going out in rural life. And I've been very fortunate that in previous jobs I've always been able to get out and about into into rural communities. And certainly part of my role is I actually advise on credit policy, particularly agricultural credit policy. So it's actually good to get out and actually talk to people who are actually dealing with the issues at the front line.
So what are the barriers? Why don't people like you
Well, look, it's a very good question. I mean, it's actually getting exposed to actually coming out to actually the country. I mean, I'll say this from a very personal point of view, but I know of all my friends who are of similar ages that we have just got too complacent, that we would like the city life and actually having choice, at our fingertips. But saying that, I mean, when you actually come out and breathe clean air, and you're not waiting at the traffic lights for 20 minutes to travel, 200-300 metres. I mean, a year and a half ago, I drove down York Street. I travelled probably about 600 metres to actually from joining York Street and getting off, and it took me 45 minutes. But we put up with it. And that's it, but it's actually getting exposed and actually coming out. And but how do we actually encourage people to come out? That's a very good question. I think we're just getting far too complacent.
There's a couple of questions in here.
My question is similar. I used to work for Fairfax, and when I started here in Narrabri in 1980, there were 24 people on the staff. Now you can walk in there and you can find out how you thought.
Yeah.
Now, Andrew was his manager and spoke to Nana, and he was coming here to be a manager. And they were lots of managerial staff. So I guess my question is similar. What is WebCat putting in place to be able to bring people to places like Narrabri and further west to help increase the population as far as technology or
look, that's a very, very good question. And look, I'm terribly sorry, but I don't know what Westpac's strategy is in that, and unfortunately, I'm unable to answer it. But what I will say, is that I suppose in some small part, it's the likes of myself from agribusiness and economics that can actually has got, I suppose, the time and the ability to get out and actually then listen to what you have to say and to listen to the questions that you raise, and then to actually have the ability to go back and sit down and talk with the people that can actually make those decisions, which I have free access to. So you make a very, very valid point, because I've seen it happen, and it's not pleasant for everybody that you see banks traditionally have retreated from rural communities and then come back in. It's the same argument, and it's nothing new. But you do have a valid point. So I'm quite happy to go back and say, look, these are concerns that have been raised, valid concerns that have been raised out in the community. I can't guarantee that anything will be done, but at least your voice will be heard. I suppose from a fairly educated position too. So, but I'll certainly take your comments on board.
Thank you. Okay, a couple more questions. Where are they?
Yep. I understand that looks like for a local bank manager program, there's been approximately 350 local bank managers standing banks in rural and regional areas across Australia. We're working on the first bank in Queensland, and talking about relocating banks out of the city areas into those rural and regional areas, and then trying to source them from rural financial councils and from local communities. Do you have any answer to that program and how it's going, and if there's more of a relocation drive, or if it's looking at
well, I don't have the answer to that, but what I will say, I mean, it's certainly in agribusiness, is, you know, the old adage that it's easier to teach a farmer to become a banker than a banker to become a farmer. But I think I'm just actually looking for one of my colleagues, actually, from retail. The Westpac table down here, so if you know, you can probably hassle those guys, and they'll probably give you a better answer than I will, unfortunately. That's a really interesting question, and it's one that you know, the banks we're actually, you know, grappling with at this moment in time. I mean, you look at Australia. I mean, it's been, you know, a lot of its economy is built on foreign investment. Agriculture, I think, is because it's very close to our hearts that it's you know, it's feeding, you know, the domestic, you know, the population, and we really don't want to see you know, our food production going into foreign hands. But, you know, particularly when you've got the, you're seeing now that the real issues of food security and that move to food sovereignty as well. You know, we want to make sure that what we're producing, I mean, it may seem a very selfish view, but I mean, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, we can actually feed our, you know, our own population, and we're not relying on anybody else. Is there going to be positives? I mean, you've seen that there have been positive spin-offs from foreign investment. You know, in the past, certainly large, take the Terra Firma example one, I mean, the Northern Cattle Property. If you look at that, if domestically, if we do not have, or farmers do not have the financial capability to actually purchase and run large, you know, agricultural properties, what's the alternative? Well, the alternative is, I mean, it either just goes to, it doesn't get used, or that somebody who's got the financial, you know, the financial backing to run it, takes it on board. And if nobody can do it domestically, it's going to be sourced externally. I suppose the benefits from that is that the land is still being used, food is still being produced, it's still access to the domestic market, it's then going to the export market as well, it's generating foreign exchange revenues, and it's boosting the economy, and it's keeping jobs. If those large rural properties are not used, Phil's talk on the multiplier effect, you take that money out of the economy. Foreign investment is good. How far do you let it go? That's up to the Foreign Investment Review Board. Fortunately, that's not my decision. But it certainly is a concern.
Okay, well, please thank Neil. We've probably just got to keep moving. I'm sorry for that. But lots of good questions there. Okay. Thank you.
As you outlined, there are quite a few Westpac people here, so we can ask them more questions later. Our next...